Threat Film Radio. One World International Human Rights Documentary Film Festival in Prague, Czech Republic.
Threat Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2019 One World Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by director Christy Garland. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, it's nice to be here.
You're here with your film, a screening at the festival. It's called What Wallet Wants. So just for the benefit of our listeners, would you mind maybe telling us a little bit about it?
Sure. The film follows really closely a young girl in the West Bank, in the Palestinian territories, and she lives in Balata camp, which is sort of known as one of the oldest refugee camps. It's where a lot of people moved in like 1948, 1949. It was established in 1950. And she lives there. And the story begins soon after her mother is released from prison. And very quickly, Walla tells us that she wants to be on the Palestinian Security Forces, one of the few police women who polices, you know, works as the police force, basically the same thing we all have. And the film follows her over the next 5.5 years as she pursues that goal.
So, I mean, this is a kind of an obvious follow-up question, but what is it that interests you about this particular setting in this particular context?
Well, I had never been to that region before, and obviously it's a very sensitive place to put a camera, and Walla herself has been living under an enormous amount of pressure because of the conflict and the history of the conflict in her own family. Her mother's, like I said, the story begins soon after her mother is released from prison for terrorism-related charges. So what was interesting to me was, first of all, the universal stuff, like all the things that we can identify with. It's a mother, complicated mother-daughter story in one way. But in another way, it's something we can all relate to. You know, I started following her right before she turned 16. And it's just, she wanted to be a cop. She wanted a bank account. She's young. She wants to, you know, she likes the idea of carrying a gun. But given where she lives, you can't really blame her for sort of wanting to have some way of protecting herself. But the fact that she wanted, like, something very constructive and positive is something that I think a lot of people can relate to. But all the pressures that surround her are extraordinary. So it's a story that gives us something to hang on to in terms of relating, but then we get to learn what it's like to be Walla in her world, which is pretty fresh and really, it's complicated, the world that she navigates her way through. But because she's such a funny, charismatic, sometimes very frustrating character, she's just a great film character, and so she takes us on quite a roller coaster.
So how did she take it when you decided to, when you told her that you were going to film her?
Well, I had to ask her, of course, and she at first said no, which I completely respect. She had assumed, you know, it was about 4 or 5 months after her mother had been released from prison. Her mother, Latifa Abudra, was quite well known. Depending on what side of the conflict you're on, she's either notorious or quite celebrated as a freedom fighter or a terrorist. I mean, she had 7 children when she decided to escort a suicide bomber into a nearby settlement. And she had no intention of getting caught. What she thought she was doing was just walking him from point A to point B and then going home, and somebody else takes over and takes them even further. But one of the people that she was planning this with was a collaborator. So that sent her to prison for 25 years, but then she was released after 8 years. It was a very famous sort of trade of over 1,000 Palestinian prisoners for 1 Israeli soldier. By famous, I mean controversial. It was sort of all over the news. So while I just assumed that I wanted to make a film about her because I really wanted to make a film about her mother, and she was very much like that teenager who's very sick of living in her mother's shadow, and also had been doing without a mother for 8 years. So there was a lot of, like, there was a bit of a, I don't know, she was a frustrated kid. She'd learned how to look after herself. There was a lot of love around her. Like, she loves her brother Muhammad, as you see in the story. They're a year or two apart, but they're kind of like twins. Like, they're so close. And then she's got a lot of love from her sisters as well. But really, this is a kid who's been raised without any disciplinarians. Her father's in Jordan with his second family, I think, or third family, and her mother had been in prison. So this is a kid who's got her fists up, so she couldn't imagine why I wanted to follow her, but I was very curious just because she had so much energy and was very charming, but also really strong-willed. And I just wanted to know what she'd do with all that energy. And so I finally said, look, no, of course it's interesting that you're learning to be a family again with your mother, but I am more curious to know what you want to do with your life. Mm. And so that's how we got started. That was in July of 2012. And then I went home. I was only able to get one thing on camera before I left, and it ended up making it into the film. And then the next year I came back, and that's when I found out that she wanted to be a cop. And so that began the whole story.
So you didn't know. Well, yeah, I mean, how much did you know what was going to happen over the course of the 5 years? Did you have a fair idea?
At the very beginning in 2012 in July, I did not know she wanted to be a cop. Yeah. All I knew is that she had, I mean, once you see the film, you realize she's like, I don't know, when you think of non-actors or amazing actors who started as non-actors, like Gerard Depardieu or whatever, she has this incredible charisma. Mm-hmm. She's just, and the one thing I thought is that she's interesting and she's obviously yearning for something and she's got this kind of conflict and it was just bursting out of her. So I could tell from her energy that there was something going on with this kid. Mm-hmm. So I knew I wanted to come back and I knew I wanted to follow her and just be with her for a while. I mean that in the long term. I was about to leave. I met her 2 days before I was scheduled to leave on that first trip. So yeah, I didn't really know anything except that this was a kid who seemed to have a lot of energy, and she was complicated and interesting, and she lived in Balata camp and was surrounded by all these pressures. So that's how it started.
But then when you find out that she wants to become a cop, were you happy about that, or were you like, oh my God, how am I going to be able to film any of this stuff? Or did you think it was going to be difficult to actually get the access to the places, you know, like the academy, the police academy, like you did?
Well, you know, the first thing that happened is she sort of shyly brought it up, because the first opposition she met was from her mother, who's very quite cynical. And being a cop on the Palestinian Security Forces is a complicated goal where she is. For one thing, it's one of the few jobs you can get as a young Palestinian, especially if you're from, you know, this area where she's from in Balata camp. But there's just not that many. And while it doesn't come from like a middle-class family or an upper-middle-class family in Ramallah, for instance, where, you know, doctors and dentists' sons and daughters, or officers' sons and daughters who have more options. They can travel abroad. They can get an education. Walla comes from poverty, pretty serious poverty in Balata camp. So a job as a cop on the Palestinian Security Forces is one of the few outlets you have, especially if you just squeak through high school like she had. So I didn't know. All I knew is that she had to sort of convince her family at first, because she was a little bit shy about it and they dismissed it out of hand right away. And so this was in 2013. So her brother said there's no women in the army, and her mother kind of scoffed at it. She said, you're going to meet a man and, you know, you'll get married and you'll get pregnant and whatever. So everybody was kind of dismissive of it. So that was sort of the first obstacle that she had to. So that obviously I had access to, because they were comfortable with me by that time. And then it was just, you know, step by step. I shot there once a year, every year, for just under 6 years. So then by the third time I shot in 2014, she still hadn't applied. She still had to kind of get around to applying and convincing her parents and stuff. So I had somebody there who was a contact, the fixer translator, who was amazing. Her name was Ikram Zubaydi. And she kept talking to Ikram and getting a sense of when she was planning to finally apply, and then I would plan my trips, because I'm based in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I would plan my trips according to that. And so when Ikram said, you know, the call opens, or it's the time to apply in November or something. So I went there at the end of October and hung around until it happened.
There's a lot of waiting then in documentary filmmaking. Sometimes you don't know, you take that for granted, you know. And also, besides that, you know, it's a long-term plan, so you don't really know when to end it. When do you kind of know that this is the time?
That's a really good question, because it's one of the questions you get asked a lot, especially if you're making observational documentaries that follow a story that unfold. Mm. And that's always what I look for. I always look for like a really compelling character. I start kind of with casting, to borrow a fictional term. And really, I mean, you can answer the question several ways. It's the film itself should be asking a very clear, dramatic question thematically at the beginning of the film. And even though the story that we follow with Walla is quite a roller coaster, The one big question, I think, and people can debate what the questions are in the film, but the one for me is, does she have a shot at a constructive, positive future? Her mother chose, for reasons that I wish we could have gone into more in the film, but why she chose to make a decision to escort a suicide bomber into a settlement when she had seven children was related to the fact that she saw her father shot, you know, at a checkpoint. She saw her brother beaten to death at a checkpoint. And then she saw her father also kill an Israeli soldier. So all of those things contribute to the cycle of violence on both sides. For me, the question is, does Walla go down that path? I felt like when I met her, she was just about to turn 16, and she was right at a fork in the road. Mm. She started to talk about wanting to be a cop, but with that chip on her shoulder and with that crazy energy, and she's her mother's daughter, I felt like she's either going to go that way or that way. Or more towards, like, if she was frustrated and if she felt like she didn't have a future, then she's going to be more angry and maybe she'll fall into this cycle that's sort of right there the whole time. You can feel it. She's surrounded by it.
Yeah.
So that was, for me, the film's question. So I didn't stop shooting until we had a solid answer to that.
I see.
Well, you know, all in all, despite the fact that it takes place in a specific setting, it's a very universal story.
That's true, yeah. I looked for everything. I mean, overall, the story question, do you repeat the lives of your parents, I think is something everybody relates to.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that old, it's like The Godfather or whatever, like they pulled me back in. Like, how does she escape what she comes from and build something new for herself, I think is sort of a universal thing. But also on a scene-by-scene basis, I would look for things that everyone could relate to. And a good example is the Facebook scene. For instance, her mother's on Facebook, yeah, and Walla comes in. And well, so we know Latifah's very politicized, of course, because she's just spent 8 years in prison. But Walla comes in and, you know, it's just the thing we can all relate to. Her, she's like, no, mom, you don't like your own post. Yeah. And drag your profile picture onto the desk, take it from the desktop, all that stuff we always have to tell our parents about how to do the internet and things like that. Like my mother says, my Google doesn't do that, and whatever, it never ends. But then when you look at Latifah's Facebook stream, it's filled with very, very violent images from of violence inflicted on Palestinians. And she is stuck in this headspace where her silo is like violence inflicted on Palestinians and the injustice of the conflict and the occupation. And Walla's like, I never post about Palestine. She's looking at kids wearing the most recent pair of jeans and all her friends and, you know, girls posing with roses and things like that. So that's the kind of thing I looked for throughout the whole film, is what are people going to recognize and relate to? And then what is going to make them go, okay, but actually, no, this is a very different world. And the emphasis was always on what is Walla's normal,
yeah,
and what do we have to learn about, like, what can this film add to the conversation about the conflict and about the situation of Palestinians, but also just the whole cycle of violence from both sides. And the way to get there, I think, with audiences, or the best way to do that, is to bring them into the story with these things that they can relate to.
Thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much for allowing me to talk about the film.
Great. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.